Hello and welcome to the Brown Boy Sauna Podcast. Possibly the loudest the jingle's ever been.
Yeah. So, welcome to the Brown Boys Sauna Podcast. You're here with Piero, Jay and Tom, our special guests for today.
No, the podcast is still the two of us only. Just today we have Tom. Be a proper presenter, come on. It's not like Tom is joining us for the rest of the podcast.
I'm giving him his dues, okay?
But now everyone thinks Tom's brown as well.
Yeah. Are you brown, Tom? Have you done the DNA test?
Downstairs.
So, good answer. Yeah.
So let's get into it. How do we know Tom, first of all? Pierre, I'll let you take this one. He's your best mate. Nice. Yeah. Go on, give a background.
Yeah.
So both of us know Tom for the past probably 8-9 years.
Yeah.
And go on, you can say how.
Yeah, so we met Tom. He was, at the time, the sous chef at the Hilton, where you used to work.
When it first opened,
yeah, when I joined as well. I remember the very first thing Tom told me was to fuck off, because that is a standard practice for chefs. And I know for a fact Tom, when he was younger, was a lot more angry than he is now. Like, he used to be very much
probably, but not in my day-to-day life.
Yeah, no. Like, at work, during service, you used to get angry quite a lot. And I think it was my very first shift doing room service. Never done room service before. And he's telling me, the steaks, fuck, what the fuck is going on? Fuck off. And just sent me this plate of steak, and I just took it upstairs, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I was working at the Beefies, I used to do quite a lot of working in the pass. And then I used to be like the main passer boy, and then I used to direct.
Yeah, other he didn't to used to take a single plate to the customer. He would just be like the fucking maestro.
Yeah,
the conductor. Just,
You take this.
But the manager at the time, Marcel, quite liked that. So yeah. I was like, you know what? I'll take this as my own role. And then Ryan as well. He was like, Jay, you're really good at this. So, but I used to communicate quite well with the chefs, because I remember they were effing and blinding at everyone.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, it's fine, I can take it. Yeah, but some other people in hospitality, they whittle.
You have to learn the tough way, which is quite funny. It happens quite a lot with my work, because we have like a chef in-house that does the canteen, right? Mm. And people get so offended when he says something. I was like, you can tell you've never worked with a chef. And he's like very, he doesn't say anything. He just gets a little bit frustrated when he's like, trying to like plate up 20 different things, and someone's coming and asking for a slice of a pineapple, and he's like, it's fucking 1 p.m. I'm like serving food here, you're asking me for a fucking slice of pineapple.
I think one of the things about being a chef is your language is atrocious.
Yeah,
that is true. But I think I was talking to my mum about it, and I was saying, obviously Not all the time, but in a high pressure situation where you're obviously
always
under pressure,
you've
got two options. One is to say, excuse me, mate, do you remember when I showed you this 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Do you remember when I showed you it a week ago? Yeah. Do you remember when I showed you it 2 days ago? Yeah. Any chance you'd be able to do it for me like that, please? Or you can say, do it how I fucking showed you.
It's the bluntness.
Yeah. You don't have the time to fucking be nice about it. You don't.
Yeah. I've noticed that with like salespeople as well, while working in a recruitment firm. They're blunt, even on email, right? Yeah. They're going to be like, where is this? I want it now.
Yeah.
Like, it's when time is a commodity, especially when you're a chef.
I think nowadays, though, the kitchen culture has changed in that it's not as
much.
I think
people are used to it a lot more, I'd say.
Yeah.
But, just to let everyone know, so we're going to do this podcast in a slightly different format. Tom has kindly cooked a 3-course meal for me and Piero.
Good stint.
Yeah. And he's brought everything, done everything amazingly. So what we're going to do is we're going to have each course, we're going to have a little break. But before that, we're going to
do a blind tasting
on the podcast live.
yeah.
and try and figure out what he's cooked for us.
And not to blow smoke up his own arsehole, but he's possibly one of the best chefs I've ever actually not just seen work. Just the work that he posts on Instagram is one of the just beautiful
yeah.
food that he makes. So I'm quite excited for it because I know his presentation is elite.
Mm.
We'll obviously be the judge of the fucking taste of it. And this is what's going to get you a Michelin star, hopefully. This podcast alone.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, I've heard you say it quite a few times.
Oh, yeah. Tom's
the best chef
and one... I joke saying that I don't joke saying Tom's my best mate. Like this is a guy. You know how you have? Oh, I have different types of friends, right?
Mm.
I've always said there's a rating behind it as well.
Yeah.
You unfortunately are one of my best friends. You're like category up there,
mm-hmm.
but you have different types of friends. One of the friends that I learn the most from is probably Tom. Mm. From the things that. He's told me not just about cooking, but in general from like life experience. Yeah. I'm making you sound really fucking old for no reason, by the way. But
what like, was your age, by the way? Rough, like you don't have to say it exactly. 30. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't look 30.
I've looked 30 since I was 17.
there's still things that he told me like fucking 7 years ago, and I still remember to this day. Like we've just spoken about it. When you take pictures of food, you need natural light. Natural light makes the make it look better. You yeah. can't do it with like a flashing light or whatnot, or like a light of some sort. You want as much natural light as possible. And I remember him telling me this bonkers years ago, and it's just like stuck in my head yeah. ever since. But there's loads of other stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good transition. So the first question I wanted to ask you, Tom, is what inspired you to become a chef? Like, what's that journey?
I think it stems back to two things. One is visiting my grandma. When I was younger, there's photos of me naked making pancakes.
Oh, nice.
And the other is...
Did you have to be naked?
No.
Pierre did not. If you don't know the background, Pierre was quite into young kids. he'll tell you about the Phil Foden story.
I don't think it was like a... Oh, we're making pancakes... Let's take a photo. Let's get Tom naked. I think it was more just...
Yeah. You got naked
I was
first.
Naked and we were making pancakes and the photo got taken. And the other is, obviously, growing up, my dad was in the military. He worked away from home. We didn't follow him, so we had a home base, if you like, where me and my mum and my sister lived. And whenever he'd come back, sporadically, whether it was every 3 months... up to 6 months, 8 months, if he'd been posted to Afghanistan. Obviously, the thing he's missing most is home-cooked food, family and friends. So his friends would come round, my mates would come round for a sleepover. We'd make homemade pizza. So that's where I think it stems from, the sort of family connection that is involved with food. And I know both of your... cultural backgrounds, family, culture, food is a huge thing.
Why'd you have to make it racial?
Profiling.
Profiling,
racial
yeah.
profiling.
Racial profiling, just because...
But it's absolutely correct.
Yeah. He's dead right. No, that's a really good point. I appreciate that you've thought of the answer, because I knew about a week ago you asked... I asked you and you didn't know how to answer this. So you've thought about it over the past week or so.
That's good. And what... So it's really interesting. You see, like, most adults, their childhood forms them. So, like, where you talk about your grandma and your parents being... Your dad being away. But how did it affect you in the house for your dad being away for so long periods of time? You as a person.
You know what? I don't know. In the sense that I don't know how it would have been different were he there.
Hmm.
Now I've just had a kid last November. He's just turned one, obviously. It must have been quite hard, I think, for my dad to be working away and not seeing us. Because, I mean, that I go a couple of days without seeing my son. Not obviously working away, but the hours I'm working, when it's busy, I might not see him for 2 days. And I feel not bad as a person, but I feel...
Guilty? Or
Almost. There's no right or wrong. Like, you know, and this is where I'm not going to go into like men's, like, you know, everyone says it's really hard, but it's hard mentally to be a man sometimes as well. Because right, what's the right thing? Go out, earn money, earn a good living, whatever, or be there for your child.
Yeah.
You know, it's
but is it also because what you've seen previously, like with your dad, you don't want to do the same thing with your son?
Possibly, but I wouldn't say I missed out on. I think it was more like extremes of, like, when my dad was home, he'd be home for a couple of weeks and we'd do loads of shit.
Yeah.
Like, it would just be madness.
Yeah.
Then he'd go away. Whereas if he had been home, I would guess I probably wouldn't have had as good a relationship with him because it makes – what's the saying?
Separation makes the
heart grow stronger or something like that. And it's true. And if anything, it probably made me have a worse relationship with my mum in the sense that she was the one who was always disciplining us always.
24/7.
Yeah, when my dad comes home, it's special. It's you want a takeaway? Yeah, we're going to get a takeaway. Whereas my mum, no, of course we're not having a takeaway. We're having beans on toast or something, you know.
Yeah. And what about, if you don't mind me asking, what about their relationship? Did it impact?
Oh, yeah, their relationship was terrible.
Yeah. They're divorced.
they're divorced, and ever since I can remember, my dad had his own bedroom, which at the time I never thought it was anything strange, but, yeah.
So was it more to keep the kids together, essentially?
I think so.
They were like,
I think so, and possibly because I was born in 93, so we're talking early 2000s. It's still, I'm not saying it's years and years ago, but it's still, I guess, divorce was not as
taboo, isn't it?
Very good point.
You're in that transitional period. Now, divorce is like nip into Tesco for a milk.
No, it's true.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point, I think. Yeah,
especially if you look at the divorce rate. I think it's like 50, 60% or something in the UK now.
And it's even higher among people who have just had a kid.
You're not married anyways. It's fine.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
No, but that's a fair point because I'm not going to name the individual, but he's been on the podcast before, and I was having a conversation with him. He had a kid. The kid's probably 1 or 2 years old, and he's saying that was probably the hardest period of his relationship with the partner 100%. As soon as the kid.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And it's no... It's no, I mean, your partner envies you going to work every day. You envy her staying at home with a kid. I would genuinely say both are as hard as each other.
Tough to balance out, isn't it?
The grass is always greener, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and in this, yes.
So how have you managed to navigate that? Because now the kid's won, right? So you've had...
the kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting a bit of feedback here.
Yeah, no, you'll be fine. Keep going.
It's fine. Yeah, it's quite bad feedback.
Give me 1 second.
So, we're talking about in terms of your relationship and that being a hard period. So, how did you manage to navigate that? Or how are you still navigating it?
You know, I'm not someone who's. I prefer to live quite an unstructured life. Not like anything crazy, but I don't have a calendar where I write stuff down. Do you know?
Great. This is
so. I wouldn't say we'd necessarily done anything incongruous, as in we haven't said, like, this is what we're going to do. One of my friends who is getting married soon and probably going to end up having kids, he said to me, but what about money? You know, because obviously kids are expensive.
Yeah.
Not at the moment, but, and honestly, it was one of my biggest concerns was money. I thought, Jesus, like.
Yeah.
Nothing. I didn't really change anything. You know, you just manage with what you have and how how it comes, you know, it's not, yeah, you just.
It's quite natural.
Yeah, I mean, not, I know there probably are people in the world, but if I fancied some ice cream and I had £5 left in my account and the kid needed nappies.
You get the ice cream.
Exactly.
Feed yourself first.
Yeah. It's the chef.
No, but
it's the chef in you.
You know what I mean? It's not.
No, I get what you mean.
Can we, all due respect,
yeah,
we have like a genuine head chef with genuine talent. Can we speak about cooking and hospitality, please?
No, it's interesting because it's all life aspects. Absolutely, because I think one of the main things which I realise with chefing as well is the in terms of the work-life balance.
Good point.
And in terms of what you were saying before, and like unstructured, the hours you do, all of that kind of stuff. I remember at the Hilton, you guys were working crazy hours, like 80, 90 hours a week.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
All of you, Scott, Jeff, all of those lot, Tom.
Just name all of
them. But that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, 100%.
How do you manage that now, even with having a kid?
Now you've said that, that's probably why I live an unstructured life.
Due
to the fact that I have never been able to structure my life.
Mm.
Someone would ask me in February, do you want to come to my birthday in October? And I'd say, well, I don't know.
I'd be working.
I don't know what. Maybe not. Saying that, in the August before my son was born, I made quite a big life decision to change my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I now run a wedding and events company, outdoor catering company. We cater all over the south of England. Been to the Isle of Wight, everywhere. And what that's enabled me to do is have a very quiet winter period. Obviously, December, Christmas, a bit busier, but mm-hmm. I had Christmas off, New Year off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here on a Saturday doing a podcast.
Any other chef working, it's impossible to get a Saturday off.
No chance to do that.
But then the roles reverse in the summer.
In the summer, it's busy. Yeah. However, I'm still minimum 2 days, normally 3 days a week. I'm home by 4 in the afternoon, which to most people working a normal job
is normal.
But for chefs, after getting home at 11 p.m., 12 a.m., my whole life, 5-6 days a week.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. It's not a healthy lifestyle.
No, I never
really understood it. Well, it's not that I never understood it. It's just like on a hospitality basis, right? And this is the business side of things, where I always compare the running a hospitality business in the UK to Sri Lanka, right? Obviously, it's two different worlds, two different cultures and everything. But my parents are always like, oh, the service in Sri Lanka is so much better. This everyone always attempts to help you out, whilst the waiters and waitresses in the UK are rubbish. And I was like, okay, hang on a minute here. Like, let's make a genuine comparison here in between everything, right? How much does it cost you to employ someone in Sri Lanka having one waiter compared to the UK, where you have genuine minimum wage standards and the living wage is so much higher? In Sri Lanka, you can hire 5-6 members of staff for the power of one there is in the UK, and that doesn't go just for waitering, that goes for every single position that you have in a hotel, restaurant, anything. So the chefs are exactly the same as well. So in the UK, they milk the shit out of you because they have to as well. But in terms of like legal rights, human rights side of things, I generally think there is a little bit of a misbalance in that.
Sorry, so just going on that point, you're in a catering company right now. Not disclosing a contract, but is it based on a 40-hour, like a normal 9-to-5, or is it we are paying you an annual salary? It doesn't matter how long you need to take to get it done.
I'm on an annual salary.
Yeah.
If there's no work, I don't go to work.
Okay.
If the kitchen's clean, all the health and safety's up to date, I don't go to work.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, my contract states 45 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. In the summer, I might work 50, 55 if it's busy.
Yeah.
There was one week this summer where I did hit 70 hours. It was madness. We had 6 weddings on the Friday, 9 on the Saturday, and 3 on the Sunday. Mm. I mean,
yeah,
like,
there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah.
Over Christmas, I worked the 22nd, I worked the 28th, and I worked the 30th.
Okay.
And then I went back to work on the 4th of Jan. And that's not using holiday.
Yeah. So the picture you're painting is essentially, if you go over the course of the whole year, you probably do your 45 hours. It balances out.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
That's not bad, to be fair.
He's not, trust me, he's working for the money he's getting paid. It's not like he's like milking.
No, but it's the whole point.
Compared to what he used to be, like, I've spoken to him about it so many times. Well, it makes so much more sense.
Obviously, I opened the Hilton, left, moved to Spain, came back, and went back to the Hilton for 2.5 years. During that time, I ended up in hospital due to overworking.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't realise this at the time. When I look back at it, I was doing minimum a 60-hour week.
Yeah? Minimum, every week.
12 hours a day.
On a quiet week.
10 till 10 was standard. Yeah?
Yeah.
10 till 10 was standard. 60-hour week, 40-hour contract.
Yeah.
That means every 2 weeks, you're doing a week of work for free.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. You don't get paid overtime anything.
No, don't get it back. Yeah. If I was there for 2 years...
Mm-hmm.
I've done a year's work for free.
Yeah.
1 month, the exec chef said, it's quiet, have a third day off. My salary was deducted 1 day for that day.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Yeah.
And
what was the breaking point for you then? Was it going to hospital or what was it? That was like, you know what, I can't do this anymore.
It was actually about 7 months after I was in hospital, I got told my job was up for redundancy. And I got told, don't worry, your job's safe, but we have to...
reevaluate everyone type of thing.
It has to be fair. Yeah, it has to be whatever. You have to do a self-evaluation. And my manager said to me, be honest, don't put yourself down, because people who don't know you are going to read this and they're going to do it from there. One of the questions was about timekeeping.
Mm.
And I predominantly worked in the conference and banqueting, cooking for the football teams, conference and events, rather than the restaurant.
Yeah.
And this isn't verbatim, but I put something along the lines of, never been late for a function, always on time, testament to good timekeeping. And the guy who was analysing my redundancy, if you like, said, it says here you ended up in hospital due to working too many hours. That's not good timekeeping, is it?
What?
Is it the echo?
The headphones are delayed and I ended up, I had to leave the room. And
who the fuck was that?
I'm not going to name drop him. He was the general manager at the time.
Oh, really?
But if you see his point, right, what he's saying is, if you're from someone looking at the outside, I can kind of get his perspective.
Yeah.
If you're meant to do a 40-hour contract and you're spending 80 hours, then why are you spending 80 hours doing a job which will take you 40 hours? Yeah. Now the answer is that you should have two people on the job.
Yeah.
When I left, then three people replace me.
Jesus.
So the problem is, and this, I would say this isn't just hospitality, this is anywhere. Two people are doing a job, one person leaves, so the other person that's left works harder and gets the job done.
Yeah.
Upper management then looks at it and goes, oh, well, this guy's now doing it on his own and he's managing.
Yeah.
Why do we need to?
Yeah.
Again, it's when you look at the numbers. But, and this is why, going back to what you said previously, Piero, why it's almost gone full circle now, where places were understaffed. And rather than campaigning for more staff, people said, I want to get paid more for what I'm doing. So people have got paid more, people have got paid more, people have got paid more. And other companies can't afford to pay to. And now we've come full circle where now the higher wages aren't enough because people are now working harder and harder and harder. And this is where, rather than the self-preservation, looking out for number one, maybe it would be wiser to look out for everyone and employ the second person and have a better working life balance than that extra 5K on your salary.
It just depends what your priorities are as well, right? Like, I've realized working in a corporation, most people are just a number on the book.
Oh, 100%.
Like, there is no personal touch, right? And I wouldn't go into the, I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but yeah, so someone basically passed, like, they got made redundant, they passed away like a few weeks later, and they were like the hardest working person in the company. So it's like, doesn't make any sense. But secondly, I think a lot of it is where you're firefighting. So you're firefighting, you're doing it out of your own goodwill of your heart, and that's what's pushing the company.
Yeah.
And then people take that for granted, right? They're like, oh, that's, you should be doing that anyway. Well, no, because I'm going above and beyond, but then you're not getting the same level of reward because it's just your, you know, from...
A perfect example of what you just said there is... We redid the breakfast somewhere I worked, and there was an internal TripAdvisor within the company. UK, Israel, and Europe was the grouping, and we were number one on breakfast. And the hierarchy came to look at our breakfast, and they said, take that off, don't do that, we don't do that everywhere else, take that off. Okay, if that's what you want us to do, we'll take it off.
Is this the Hilton? Can't say.
Next month, we were number one most deteriorated score. Not at the bottom, but we'd gone down. And we got called into a crisis meeting to ask why had we deteriorated so much.
Yeah.
Now, I don't... Now, I'm not in charge of a multi-million pound hotel company, and I can't tell you how to run it, but... In my opinion, the thing to have done would have been go to the number one scoring hotel, analyse what they're doing, and implement it across the board everywhere else.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
And that goes, but that was...
Yeah, but they don't do black pudding in Israel.
No, but I think the point he's trying to make is management, right?
Yeah.
All these people, they need to justify why are they on such a high salary? Why are they, what are they doing with their roles? And similar to the example you mentioned, there's been an online spat with Pat McAfee on ESPN. You probably, do you know him? He's a podcaster, but he's on.
Punter.
So anyway, he's moved from his own brand. He's gone to ESPN, where you got executive producers, all of these kind of people, and they're now trying to manage the content, which made him like one of the best sports analysts, basically. And they're like, no, you shouldn't do this. And he just called them out in the air. He was like, guys, you can't do this to me. This is the best show. Like, I've come onto your platform. Why are you trying to ruin it? And it's similar to, like, the management there didn't need to step in, did they? It's like, you're number one. And like you said, what are you doing right? Let's implement it.
Yeah.
So,
If I was the manager, I would have done that. That's just what I want to say. If anyone's listening for offering me new roles.
Yeah, sure. But,
Can we think about the food, by the way, now?
Yeah, one last question before we go on to the food. We're talking about, like, you becoming a chef and stuff. But will you recommend it to your own son, like, when he grows up? Will you be like...
Great. You know what? Clap, JN. That's actually a really, really good question. I got a lot of time for that.
And I'm not going to deflect the question, and I'm not trying to sound cliche, but... Whatever he wants to do, I'll be happy for him to do.
Yeah.
And I think this stems, to be honest, I'm not sure about you, Jay. Mm. I know Piero. I was under a lot of, not pressure, but I always was assumed I had to go to university. I came out with a degree and then got a job.
Yeah.
I loved cooking. I have to thank the careers advisor at the grammar school I went to, who said, who said, if you want to be a chef, there's no point going to university. You'll start at the bottom after you leave. And to be honest, I would have gone to university and come out with a degree that I'd partied away. Not that I was a hard partier or anything like that, but
it would have been different.
There was nothing that, no niche that I was in that I really. So if Chef is what he wanted to do, I'd support him in doing that. Would I want that for him? Probably not. In hindsight, would I still do it? Yeah, I would, because I really do love it. I might have taken a different step in my career, at a different point. I probably would have gone to London.
Yeah.
That's something I regret not doing.
Well, more opportunity there, or?
No. But
can I answer this one for you?
Yeah.
When I met Tom at 24, and I don't know, do you know what Michelin stars are? Just let me finish this point.
Really fucking good tyres.
No, I think I know. It's a magazine which goes out and rates people's food, like a French.
It is the most prestigious
thing award a chef can get.
Fine dining that a chef can hold.
And I said at 24 when I met him, I was like, one day he's going to get a Michelin star. Okay, and looking at the photos of his food, I'll stand by it forever. Because, like, I think his food is to that level. But I know how political chefing is. It's just like any other job in a corporation, right? It's like you have to do the hard work when you're young to be able to have a chance somewhere.
Reap the rewards later.
And it's very much like that in chefing, I'd say. And I'd say that's... I think that's got to play a part of it somewhat. I just know you wouldn't have said that, that's why.
And I progressed too quickly within hotels.
Yeah.
What was the progression? So what was your first role, and how did you progress up, essentially? So what are the differences? You said, you met you're a sous chef, but what was the up and down?
Prior to that, I did an apprenticeship, and this goes back to... And then I qualified as a chef, and I thought, I'm going to go back and do A-levels and go to uni. Yeah, done my qualification. I went back to do A-levels, and I ended up leaving after 3 months. It just wasn't for me. After working for a year, then going back into a school environment, it was
challenging.
Yeah, very, very challenging. I started at a hotel making bacon sandwiches at a golf course. And then gradually, any work in the evening, go upstairs in the restaurant, progress there to junior sous. I got a promotion every year, bam, 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 bam.
Mm-hmm.
Until some stuff happened, and the operations manager said, I'm opening a new hotel in Southampton, you're coming with me. Went to Southampton, opened the hotel, left to go to Spain. Because my ex-partner started at the bottom again in Spain because I didn't speak the language, peeling prawns, peeling potatoes, progressed to head chef in Spain.
How long did that take you?
2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. I was on TV in Spain with some of my recipes.
Nice.
Not national TV, regional, but still
an accomplishment.
Then we split up, and regrettably, I think, I made the decision at the time, regrettably. I don't look back on it now. Obviously, yeah. I'm happy with my life now, but at the time, I could have and maybe should have stayed in Spain and done some more, but it was easier to just fuck off and come back to the UK.
Yeah.
When I came back to the Hilton, obviously, I've explained why I left there, and that's when I took my first head chef role.
At the Hilton?
No, at Marwell.
Okay, yeah. So you left the Hilton.
And how old were you when you first time age? What age were you when you got head chef?
26.
Yeah,
26, 27.
Yeah, which is very young.
Yeah.
For a head chef.
So that
explains what you're saying.
And then there's something called rosettes and Michelin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Rosettes is it doesn't, but one rosette, two rosette, three rosette, one Michelin star, four rosettes, two Michelin star. Yeah, that's like the
level.
It's not. They look at different things. One rosette is, if everything's homemade, one rosette is achievable. And we had our rosette inspection. Obviously, they don't let you know when that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady said, this is, the food is three rosette standard. The hotel is not that standard. And there would be a gap there between the clients who were coming to the hotel and the clients who were coming there for the food.
Mm-hmm.
The food was, basically, she was saying the food is too good for the hotel.
Yeah.
I then went to the owner and said, can we push for...
Or renovate.
Yeah. And I was told, and I don't think it was wrong for the hotel, but it was wrong for me, mm-hmm. that they wanted to get rid of the fine dining and concentrate more on sort of kids and that sort of thing. It's right.
More the demographic comes to the hotel.
Which makes sense. You know? But for me, that wasn't the right role. And that's when I then made a move into
catering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I think this is a good segue. So let's have the starter.
Yeah. Are we blind testing it?
We're blind testing it.
Okay.
So I don't know how we want to do this in terms of...
Close your eyes, mate.
Do you want to bring us a spoon, if you wouldn't mind, Tom? And then we'll taste and figure out what it's like.
Can we do it with a spoon without looking?
Huh?
We just put our hands over the eyes. Or
okay.
Something. Yeah.
Okay.
Just close your eyes and.
And you spoon feed us.
airplane.
Right.
Cheers. All right. So blind tasting of the stars coming
eyes
up.
Eyes are closed. Do I hold my hand out for the spoon?
Yes.
All right.
Come in. 3, 2, 1.
Got it.
Jake.
Have you given me the right end?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. This is going to be horrific for our listeners, I reckon.
Yeah.
I don't know where
it goes in.
Yes, everything. Give the spoons back.
Interesting.
Fuck.
I'll have a first stab at it. Some kind of peas, I want to say maybe chickpeas or something. I want to say either lobster or some kind of soft kind of meat. Then I felt the term in Asian is sev, but this might be something completely different, but like something long and kind of a bit of pomegranate potentially as well. But basically what I'm saying is I haven't got a fucking clue what it is.
Go back to sev. Describe
it. Yeah.
Sev is like... I'll show you a picture online.
Yeah. Piero, go.
I'm not going to lie. I thought there were strong flavours of turmeric.
Yeah.
Maybe a touch of coriander. Maybe a touch of coriander, but... It was generally hard to see because the consistency felt like chicken.
No.
Consistency felt like chicken, but it felt like seafood at the same time.
Yeah,
so lobster was actually a really good shout, so I'm probably thinking something like prawns.
Prawns are a good try as well.
Lobster prawn type thing because that's the consistency I felt, but turmeric type of sauce. But there's another part to it, potato-y type, that... I wouldn't be able to describe what I do know. It tasted fucking good.
It was really
good. So it was a sweet potato curry.
Yeah, that's why turmeric. Yeah, puree. Yeah, no turmeric. Curry powder.
A coconut and fresh turmeric.
Yes,
with ginger and chili.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sauce. Salsify, cooked in turmeric. Lobster.
Ah, lobster. Got that one.
Pea.
Well done.
I didn't say chickpeas or some kind of peas. Yeah.
Pea and pickled golden raisin.
and any kind of pomegranate or that kind of.
I think it's the raisin.
Golden raisin.
Pickled golden raisin. Yeah.
But, hey, together, I think we've done well there.
Yeah.
You got the lobster, I got the turmeric. I think
that's the most important part.
Well, I'm saying flavouring wise, I got it.
Yeah.
Flavouring wise, okay. We got it.
Right, so
can we eat now?
No, we're going to eat and then we're going to come back and carry on with the podcast. Yeah. So, short little break.
Out of 10, Jay, as a starter.
Out of 10, I'll give it a strong 8.
Fucking harsh.
No, but I don't think anything is a 10.
Yeah.
And we've had this conversation about rating girls before. But no, it's not food. But, but it's the same principle. I don't think anything is a 10. So yeah. The highest you can get is a 9.5 or somewhere around there. So, amazing.
For me, it's an 8.9 because I'm now looking forward to the main.
Yeah. No. And what I would say is everything is down to personal taste. Yeah. You know, I could have cooked that and one of you could have said, sorry, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And not blowing smoke up my own arse, but that's not to say the food's bad.
Yeah.
It's...
Do you want
to... Someone who's allergic to lobster, they wouldn't like that.
You might want to tell... We might want to say what it actually was, the plate, because we haven't said that.
I think he briefly described it.
No, just say it properly. What would you present it as?
So it'd be lobster tail,
yeah.
Sweet potato curry, and coconut. Is how it would read on a menu.
Yeah.
What there actually was a coconut, ginger, coriander, chili reduction, turmeric, and coconut cooked salsify, which you both tried, I think, for the first time.
Yeah, I generally do not know what salsify is.
Yeah.
Lobster tail, fresh peas, just raw, which are punchy, fresh, sweet, pickled golden raisins, which adds a bit of acidity, a bit of sweetness again, and micro coriander.
Yeah.
So, in terms of this dish, you've never cooked it before?
No.
And this was going to come on to one of my other questions, is how, because I see cooking as an art form, right? Yeah. Like, it's endless, the choices you have and what you could do.
Yeah.
So how did you come to that? What was the process in terms of you saying, I'm going to cook a lobster tail sweet potato curry with coconut?
So, the reason I wanted to cook lobster is lobster's tasty.
Mm-hmm.
I love prawns, and I wasn't sure whether you, after recently, not recently, but becoming
non-vegetarian,
had tried lobster.
Hmm.
Piero, what you both haven't realised, Piero likes butter chicken. I mean, you've probably realised that.
I didn't realise that a long while ago.
What you haven't realised is that dish is butter chicken.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Butter lobster.
Yeah.
All the components there are what you would put in a butter chicken sauce.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Obviously not the salsify, obviously not the peas, not the raisins.
There's a lot of additives.
But it fundamentally, the flavours you're tasting there is butter chicken. Butter lobster.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. How do you stay updated with, like, let's say, the latest culinary techniques, the tools, the industry trends? Like, how do you go about it? So you came up with this dish, but what about in the future?
See, I don't want to say I'm a maverick or anything like that, but I try and do new things all the time.
Mm.
There are some fail-safes that you will always fall back on. One of them is a lamb rump with feta and rhubarb, and it will blow your mind that, you know, that will be on my menu somehow, somewhere, all the time.
Yeah.
Mm.
I just think it's one of the nicest things I've ever eaten in my life.
Yeah.
So will you say that's your signature dish then?
No. I don't know.
Okay.
I would adapt and change for who the audience and where I'm cooking.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Can we quickly go through the massive debate that we've had this week with you? So, I'm not going to say who you are doing what for. So,
I am better at paddle than you.
Agree.
So, Tom sent me this canapé that you're designing right now. And he sent me the canapé and he sent me some of the colour structures that he wanted to make. It looked obviously as stunning as we know he does. I had a comment.
Tom King, double M, double I, Instagram, let's go.
Sorry, good plug.
We're going to plug
you. We'll plug you at the end anyway, don't worry.
But Tom, I said, Tom, hey, can you remove, can we look at it by removing, can I say what it was?
The green?
Yeah, the micro coriander. Can we remove the micro coriander and see how it looks? And did it or did it not start like a massive debate for you?
Yeah. Because me personally, I like them both.
Yeah.
Look, equally, both of them had a plus and negatives and pluses. And interestingly, what I found was I posted it on my Instagram with a question. I also posted it on Facebook. Instagram I use as a portfolio. Facebook I use so I don't have to send it to my great aunt or whoever. Anyway. And very interestingly, people working in hospitality and chefs were in favour of without green. But that then begs the question. Who are you cooking for?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you cooking for yourself?
Yeah.
Or are you cooking for the customer that's buying it?
It's a great
debate. All the people that have commented who aren't working in hospitality are going to be your customers. Chefs do go out to eat as well.
We're going
to
post the pictures of that on Instagram as well, because I thought it was a really good debate.
Have you seen it? No, I haven't. We'll show you in a sec.
But my subsequent question to that is, because I know you're very good at this, but how important is presentation for you, for your dishes?
Not as important as flavour. Flavour is paramount.
Yeah.
If something looks good and tastes shit, it's going to be worse than just tasting bad.
Yeah.
Because if it looks good, people are expecting the flavour to back it up.
Yeah.
And then if it's an anticlimax, it's going to really hit home that it's not as good as the presentation. And one thing I've always been able to do is cook with flavour.
Yeah.
You know, even when I was younger and I'm making stuff, it tastes good. And one thing I've refined now, every week I'm progressing, you know, and this is goes back to what Jay was saying about, obviously I follow a lot of stuff on Instagram and different chefs worldwide, different techniques, but if I do something new to me every single time, I'm not saying every single day I do something new, but
consistently,
I'm going to stumble on stuff that has it ever been done before? Probably. You know, everyone's cooked everything. But if it's new to me, it's exciting. It keeps my brain occupied, moving constantly.
Can I just ask a subsequent question to that? How many times have you used your sous vide machine?
2.
So I remember this. I don't know where it is. Yeah, 6-7 years.
But I bought a better one.
Yeah, 6-7 years back, you did so much research. I remember you clearly went. You bought a juicer, and you bought a sous vide machine,
and a vat pack machine.
And the vat pack machine, for the sous vide. Yeah, the sous vide. I remember you saying, "Oh, I want to use. I want to start using sous vide to cook." I don't think you've used it twice. But I don't use the juicer. The juicer is good.
Juicer I use a lot. Sous vide machine. I use sous vide as a cooking technique.
Yeah.
What I bought was a sous vide for home, and I just don't cook sous vide at home.
It's just time consuming, and
it doesn't work at work.
Yeah.
I did try and find it for today.
Yeah.
Don't know where it is. But this is the only time I reckon it would be a good. I wasted £60. That's not saying the sous vide machine isn't any good. Yeah. It's perfect for what it does. Yeah. But
you don't have to use for it.
Do you wanna? Yeah. Do you know what sous vide is?
No, but I can look it up after. It's fine.
It's a water bath.
It's a water bath.
Okay. So when you're cooking meat and you can cook anything in there. But when you're cooking meat and you want it rare at 38 degrees, imagine a circle. Heat is cooking from the outside. The middle will be 38, but the outside will be well done. Sous vide, you can set at 38 degrees, drop something in a vacuum sealed packet,
And the whole thing?
The whole thing will be 38 degrees. You take it out, you sear it on the outside, and it's perfectly cooked, like from corner to corner.
Yeah. Now, I had a question coming on the back of that.
Yeah.
In terms of, so you like exploring things and cooking new things and experimenting. But in the industry you're in, within the catering industry, how much opportunity do you get to do that? Because from my point of view, mostly it's weddings or stuff like that, right? And it's not going to deviate much from your standard wedding. Well, it might do, but generally it's going to be your safe options. You may be looking a bit more extravagant. You go here.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
It's so, chicken.
Yeah.
So it's chicken with Dauphinoise potatoes and carrots.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's 50% of what I do.
Yeah.
It's not, but...
Yeah, but the point I was coming to was, so with that being said, where do you get these opportunities to, you know, to really expand your horizon, experiment, all of that kind of stuff? Because what you're serving to your audience, let's say 80, 90% of the time, is going to be your standard thing.
Think of it like a tattoo artist, if you like. They could be the world's best artist.
Yeah.
If someone wants a triangle on their hand... saying hello, that's what they're going to have to draw. You know, I can't ring someone up and go, I know you want chicken on your wedding, but actually I can cook some really nice lamb. You know, and
but do you try and push the audience? So let's say if they come in for tasters or stuff like that,
what you'll find is, you know, when someone's coming in for a tasting, whether they like food or they no, everyone likes food. That's the wrong... But you
it's the appreciation value.
You do one tasting and they're tasting three chicken dishes.
Yeah.
You know, they just want what they want.
Yeah.
And on the menus that I've designed for the company I work for, we've got different dishes. So you've got your pulled lamb shoulder with mash and carrots, which is the basic everywhere does. You've got lamb rump with a shepherd's pie bonbon, which is like a fried breaded shepherd's pie, which is a bit more out there. And then you've got lamb rump with bulgur wheat harissa minted yogurt, which is again
further down the scale.
So you've got sort of three options there, so because at the end of the day it's their wedding, you know, and you can't dictate to them what they should eat. As much as I like to.
Yeah, but no, but that brings me full circle in terms of what, like, why you're into chefing and all of this. Don't you think it's limiting your capabilities in terms of, let's say, if you had, you're a head chef at a, I forgot what name, below Michelin or Michelin, then you can set your own menu and you're probably changing your menu multiple times a year, right? So... that would probably bring you more joy, but more stress also in terms of all of that headache. So have you thought about that? Or
yeah, this goes back to what I was saying about when I changed my job to do this was 5 months before my son was born. With that in mind, and that is, I'm home at 4 o'clock in the evening. Am I getting as much enjoyment out of my work? Sometimes, not every day, but I'm not killing myself.
And you get to see your son
on
a regular basis. I think that's really important. How are we doing for time, Tom?
You're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. We'll be on to the mains now. So let's take a little
blind test.
Let's do blind tasting again and see how that goes.
Yeah. Right, close my eyes.
We're on to the main.
Okay. Give me that fucking spoon. I still don't know where the end of the spoon is.
It's so hard when you shut your eyes.
Okay, shall I go first this time? Tom, are you going to be here to listen? Tom! No, he's not coming. Well,
go on, just go first anyway.
Open your eyes, Jake. For me, the protein is lamb. I wasn't sure about the sides, to be honest, the overall mixture. Obviously, quite something quite soft, which is potato type, but I don't think it's potato necessarily. But definitely not.
I think there is something potato-y there.
Okay.
I'm going to say lamb as well. Yeah. I think it was lamb. The textures I'm getting in terms of... I'm trying to think of... I'm feeling a bit like... I don't know. I want to say like kind of Chinese, kind of sour kind of textures.
I couldn't disagree more, but okay. I couldn't disagree more. That's like...
Well, maybe not sour, but I'm getting like kind of...
That's very hearty British type of cooking.
I'm getting a bit Chinese-y.
He's got a hint of a fucking spring roll and some wontons in that bite of food.
It was a spring roll.
That is actually outrageous. Chinese-y.
I don't know where I've got it from, but... There's some kind of puree, I want to say.
Puree, yeah. It's
some kind of puree.
Yeah.
I want to say it would look brown or like blacky puree, like, you know, that kind of...
I think it could generally just be like... it's a mustard mash.
Hmm. Right, let's...
Tom, am I right? Is that a mustard mash?
Let's eat the dish and then we'll come back.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Tom, what was the dish?
Beef. No, so it was a Chateaubriand, which is basically the nice cut of a fillet steak. If a fillet looks like a long hammer, it's the hammer end.
So we're still wrong with lamb, right?
Yeah, we'll go with lamb. And basically, it's a Sunday lunch. So there was a cauliflower cheese puree.
Yeah.
Which was cauliflower and old Winchester cheddar, which is a cheddar produced in Winchester. Charred onion with thyme and a red wine sauce with sorrel leaves. The leaves give it a bit of acidity. Probably you could argue the onion is sweet, the sorrel leaves are sour. Therefore, the dish is basically Chinese.
It is Chinese. Yeah. That's spot on.
We had sweet and sour chicken.
I did say like a dark puree or something, which was
the gravy.
The gravy, exactly. Yeah. So I did get that bit. And
potato.
How do you taste
the mustard potato?
Whether it's light or dark.
No, but you can kind of tell by the puree.
But it wasn't the puree.
But yeah, as I said to you while you were eating it, I was surprised at how well you did on the starter, because blind tasting is very, very hard.
Yeah, but also, bro, you give us curry. Like,
we're brown.
Yeah, like,
curry.
We're bound to be a little bit strong on that side.
And in terms of if you're going to sell that dish in a restaurant, what would you label it up as? So the first one was a lobster tail sweet potato curry with coconut. This one?
That would be beef fillet, charred onion, cauliflower, an old Winchester puree, confit, garlic and thyme potato.
Nice. Right.
In other words, Sunday roast.
Yeah.
Sunday on a Saturday.
Now, let's get on to the desserts.
Definitely.
Then we can wrap it up at the end.
Blind tasting and eat it at the same time, Lovely. So just bring the plate out, Tom.
Yeah.
When you're done,
Yeah.
Blind testing the dessert. I'm waiting.
I'm just going to feed you.
Are you just going to feed me? Okay. Is it the same spoon as Jay?
No.
I was about to say.
It tastes even better. Honestly, this has bamboozled me. I'm getting a crunchy taste again. Is it the Sev, Tom? Are you fucking using Sev again?
I'm even looking at it. I have no idea what the fuck this is. No,
this is bamboozled me.
I don't think you boys have had it before.
Mm.
There's a crunchy taste.
The crunchy taste is... the crunchy taste is...
Banoffee.
Panicum.
Banoffee pie.
Banana
makes sense.
Wow.
Banana makes a lot of sense. That's fucking this stunning, looks mate.
Stunning.
That's incredible. It's actually a joke that he's actually just made that and it's here.
In like 3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I know he made the cake, but it's just like the look of it. It's insane, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's a Banoffee macaroon as well, which wasn't on the.
Nothing. Oh yeah, the macaroon.
Yeah. And I took your spoon. Sorry.
We might need to stop the podcast. I need this probably.
Go on, Tom. Did you want to explain the dessert?
So it's basically a take on banoffee pie. It's got a crunchy foyotine base, which is basically pancakes that have been shredded and cooked till they're crispy. Banana mousse. The base has white chocolate in as well. Banana mousse, mirror glaze. And then it's topped with like a banana and dulce de leche and vanilla cream. That is, Pierre is asking me what something is. It's a pecan and dulce de leche praline. Some crispy chocolate balls. Honeycomb twill. And banoffee macaroon.
Would you think, I'd say, in terms of making desserts look unreal, I think you'd back yourself 9 out of 10 times to make something just incredible.
I can fight any dessert.
Yeah.
Because
you never really were a pastry chef either.
No.
This is unbelievable.
What about these ones, Tom?
Viola flowers. You can grow them in your garden.
And how are these different in terms of the...
They're not.
No.
Purely aesthetic.
I mean, they have a floral flavour.
Yeah.
But
it tastes all right.
But
yeah.
they are there more for colour.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Yeah, so now we've got the picture. But a question I was going to come on to was in terms, how do I phrase this? In terms of you cooking for yourself and family compared to you cooking for an audience, let's say, you know, in the catering business or even in a restaurant, how does that differ? Do you pay that much attention when you're cooking for yourself and your family?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Piero asked me a similar question once when we went to a football game and he said,
great point.
I can't believe you're getting some food here. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, you're a chef, a good chef. I can't believe you're having, I don't know, a burger or a hot dog.
Yeah, it was a football burger.
Football burger.
I remember this. Yeah.
I said to him, yeah, but I enjoy scallops. I enjoy lobster. But I'm not going to sit in a stand at a football game and eat some lobster. You want a dirty shit burger because you're at the football and to sink a quick pint because you've waited 14 minutes in the queue and it's kicking off. So you just go, bam, done. That's it.
Sounds like you can neck a pint.
So if I go home tonight or after work, no, I'm not going to make something like that. Not in a million years, you know. But, for example, for my son's birthday, I went...
Jesus, he's not fucking listening either. He's asking these questions and they're just fucking eating.
But I'm putting the mic away so I don't have to. Don't have to listen.
But yeah. So I turn it.
I think it's musophobia, the fear of the sound of eating. And musophobia. If you have that for this episode.
People have fears for everything.
What's a phobia of moose is called then? Like wild moose.
Wild musophobia. Go on, carry on. So you're saying you're not going to go home and cook this?
No, I'll make a cheese toasty. Or whatever, you know?
Because that's what I found, in terms of even when I was working at the Hilton and I asked the chefs these questions, it was in terms of, because you take so much prep and cooking for other people, I think it's the complete opposite when you cook for yourself. It's almost like, I have to do this for work.
I'll tell you where I find it most is when I go shopping. I cannot shop. I can't do a weekly shop. I could go out without a list and buy everything I needed to cook a 7-course meal in one shop. Go, but to plan 7 meals over 7 days, no.
So how do you do your shopping for the house? Or does your missus do that?
I do it on a day-by-day. Not going to the shop every day, but you get your... I decide on the day what I'm eating rather than...
So you wake up in the morning and then you're going to be like, I'm going to eat this and this.
Yeah.
But do you think that's detrimental to your health? In terms of if you, like, me and Luke in the house, we do meal preps, right? And you could say it's lazy, agreed, but it's structured, right? So we know for lunch you're going to have chicken and rice. For dinner you're going to have a meat and a salad, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all prepared already. You don't have to think about it. But for your, in your case, if you're saying you're doing it every day.
No. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I also came to the realisation a couple of days ago that I've got no excuses. I don't know. Harry Kane flew out a lady who used to work at Saints, who then went to Tottenham to be his own personal chef for upwards of 100K in Germany. I wiped the floor with her, hands down. Yeah, no, yeah. No questions asked. No, like, no, not even up for a debate.
Yeah.
Therefore, you could argue I have a better personal chef than
Harry Kane.
Harry Kane.
Yeah. So basically, this is an
and that's why I'm a fat bastard.
Harry Kane. Or any footballers looking for chefs.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got the right person here for you. Yeah.
That's why we're going to the football today.
Yeah.
Of which we need to fucking wrap up. Which I wanted to ask the final questions, and I think.
No, you tell me.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, final question is: how much would you pay for that meal?
No,
the 3-course meal.
So let's break this down, right? So we'll first answer how much we'll pay for each dish,
yeah,
right?
Which is what we were going to pay. We were going to say anyway.
Relax. Then you tell us what the cost is. Yeah. Of making those dishes and what markup you'll put on it if you're selling it in a premises.
Okay.
So those three things, right?
Yeah.
So we start off with the starters. So lobster tail, sweet potato curry and coconut.
Yeah, you're probably looking around, because it's lobster, you're probably looking around 12 to 15 quid for the starter.
I was thinking more 20.
20 for the starter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine.
Because of the lobster,
yeah.
Personally. I don't know how expensive lobster is, but I'll have gone for 20.
Yep.
Right. Second dish, beef filled, charred onion, and then you'll probably have to fill in the blanks after this.
Old Winchester cheddar, cauliflower, red wine juice.
For that one, I'm probably looking at 35, maybe.
Yeah, 40, I said, yeah.
Okay. And then
that's what I'm willing to pay as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dessert. The
dessert you're looking at.
What's the dessert again?
For me, generally, I know dessert kind of have a cap, but for me, that is a dessert that's worth around the 15 quid and upwards. Yeah, I know that's probably incorrect, but that's upwards of that because it's a great fucking dessert.
Yeah, I'll have probably labelled it 12, 14, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Cost
of each.
Are you wanting the cost that I paid for this?
Yeah.
Or are you wanting a cost that I would pay for this if I was working in a restaurant? As in, I bought some of these ingredients from Tesco.
Yeah.
Tesco prices are not matching what I'm getting from the supplier.
Yeah, just on average, how much would it cost to make you that dish?
Go for it as if you're working in a restaurant. So how much will it cost you, and then how much will you sell it for in a restaurant?
So the starter is about £4.50, £5.
Yeah.
Cost.
Mm-hmm.
The main course, about £8.50, £9, £10.50, depending on the price of beef at the time, because fundamentally that's same as the lobster.
Yeah.
It's the lobster or the beef.
Per dish or per to get it done?
Per dish.
Yeah.
And the cost of the dessert. And now, dessert cost is always going to be lower.
Yeah.
because desserts are what? Flour, sugar, butter and cream. Butter and cream is expensive, but it's not expensive. But as you can see, what you're paying for in the desserts is the elaboration.
Yeah.
So the cost of that dessert is about £3.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, most restaurants will work on a 33%, 30%, 28% GP.
Mm-hmm.
I know it roughly, times it by three for the selling price, times it by 3.5, you're making a bit more money because that factors in more or less. You're going to have 30% on your cost, 30% on your overheads and wages, and 30% profit.
Okay.
I know that's 90%.
So the first one, did you say was 350 or was it how much?
£4.55.
So 15 quid. So how much did we say? 15 quid?
In the region of 12 to 15 quid.
Yeah.
Main course, 25 to 35.
Yeah, I went well over because I just thought the components were so good together.
Dessert, 10 to 15, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Now, but... an interesting thing is, you say, okay, so that's, what, 50, 60 quid?
Yeah.
To eat all three, you'd go 45, 50.
Yeah.
Why? Because someone's more likely to look at the menu and go, bloody hell, that's 12 quid, that's 12 quid, that's 30 quid. You're saving a tenner, so I'm going to order all three. That's better for you as a business owner than individually pricing them all. And not selling any dessert because you're making them, not selling them and throwing them in the bin or giving them to staff and just losing the money.
Yeah.
So basically you'll put an incentive in. So let's say order two a starter and a main and it's 30 quid or order all three and it's like 45, something like that.
Go to Starbucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the medium. No one buys a medium.
Hmm.
They either get small for £1. The medium is £1.80. The large is £2. Why is the medium £1.80?
So people
because everyone who goes in there goes, I'm getting a large. So you go in there and part with the most money you can.
Makes sense. Final questions.
Okay. A bit more lighthearted, but is there any like funny stories you can share from the kitchen?
There's fucking loads of
without naming any names and doing all of that. Because I've seen some shit whilst working in the kitchen.
The funniest story I have is from a hotel, and I will preface this with, it was the guy's first and his last day. He didn't get fired. He just got abused. Not like actually abused, but you'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those who don't work in the hospitality may not have ever seen a chafing dish, right? But a chafing dish is, imagine you're at a hotel going for a breakfast buffet. It's where they're keeping your sausages, bacon, beans warm. Yeah. Fundamentally, they're a metal tray filled with water. They have candles underneath, gas burners, keeps the hot water. You put another metal tray in and the steam generates heat to keep that tray warm. I've been asked to go in and make 600 bacon rolls because the breakfast chef wasn't going to do it. So I've been in since 5, preparing it all, making these breakfast rolls. A guy comes up to me and I gave him 40 bacon rolls in a gastro and I said, go and put them in the chafing dish. He said, okay.
What time was this?
6 a.m.
Okay.
He's gone out. He's come back with an empty tray. I said, where are the bacon rolls? In the chafing dish. What? What? You've got the tray? Yeah, they're in the chafing. Sorry. I've walked out into the foyer and he's tipped the bacon rolls into the boiling water. Right? Jeez. And I've said to him, what the fuck are you doing? Well, I've never used a chafing dish before. I said, okay, but have you had a bacon sandwich before? Well, yeah. So what do you think is going to happen to 40 bacon rolls if you put them in boiling water? I mean, the rolls are floating on top of the water, expanded. Yeah. All the bacon is at the fucking bottom.
Yeah.
The butter's split everywhere in the water. Yeah, that was the... the one that really
So he started a shift, like let's say 5, 6 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then within a few minutes, he was gone.
No, because the other chefs didn't arrive till about 10.
Okay.
And obviously that was the first thing I told them. And then they all sought him out and gave him some shit and then he never came back.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Wow, that is pretty bad. And in terms of, actually, I did want to ask you this. In terms of, like, so we've spoken about, like, the holy grail of chefing, let's say. It's, you know, getting those Michelin stars, etc. What's your, like, what do you see yourself as your career path? Now you're 30, let's say the next, you know, even 10 years or so. Where do you see yourself going in the industry?
I want to pay off my mortgage. Mm-hmm. Right, that's my goal at the moment.
Yeah.
If I won the lottery tomorrow, I don't play the lottery. If I came across a load of money and money was not why
an issue, yeah,
I would buy a van,
mm-hmm.
and in it I would have a portable kitchen.
Nice.
And I would do as a job what I'd just done now: go around to people's houses, delivering fine dining experiences in your own home. Because not slating your house, not slating your oven.
Mm-hmm.
I've managed to cook that with an oven I've never used before, a kitchen I've never been in before.
Mm-hmm.
If I had my own portable kitchen,
yeah,
which I was comfortable in, I knew my way around, I knew exactly how long that had to be in the oven, you know,
yeah.
It'd be even better.
But is there a market for that? Are people already? I'm guessing people are already doing that, right? Or
yeah,
no?
people do it. Private chefing is everywhere.
Hmm.
Probably not enough to earn as much money as I'm getting paid now.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, I'm providing for my son, the mortgage, everything. So
yeah,
I can't just up and leave that. But I have set up my own business. I am my own limited company.
Nice.
With that in mind. For the future.
That's the future goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Work for myself.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Be your own boss. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Lovely. Right. Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. I had a couple of others, but yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Actually, quick one. We did mention before, we had a brief conversation about like the icks and the icks of hospitality, right?
Yeah.
We had this conversation at David Lloyd's where we're talking about like, as a chef, what like, if you had criticism, how will you deal with it? Stuff like that. But what are your main icks at the moment in hospitality? Or what do you get annoyed by?
Annoyed?
Yeah. Everything.
And I don't think it's just a hospitality thing. It's as a head chef, my job is to instruct people and nurture people into becoming better chefs and show them how to do different techniques, teach them, saying stuff four times. And that four times isn't the number that really winds me up, but
repeating yourself.
I don't mind repeating sometimes, you know, not the second time.
Yeah.
That's not going to, but when it's the fifth time, the sixth time, I'm saying to someone, we don't do it like that. We do it like this. Because I don't want to be like the old chef who, you fucking blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
But sometimes.
37.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's wrap it up.
No, let me finish. But in terms of that, you mentioned repeating it four or five times. Isn't it the conveyor belt? Isn't it the people you take on, essentially, or the ones who are wanting to become chefs, that maybe they're the issue, you know what I mean? Like, let's say I was looking for an accountant and I looked at his CV and I'm like, okay, yeah, you can do accountancy.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of the people you're hiring, or is there the caliber of people basically who can do the job you're asking them to do?
All those people that can't do accountancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's all the people who can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's all the people who can't do that. Then there's all the people who can't do that. Then there's all the people who can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all the people who can't do that. And they're the people that apply for hospitality.
That's a fair point.
So, yeah, they're not.
You find hospitality, you've got, and this is a massive generalisation, you've got four types of people. You've got young, student, or first foray into the working world.
Mm-hmm.
You've got older people who have sort of taken a step back now. They've finished their career, they've worked, they've paid, you know, they're just doing the odd shift here and there. You've got people who enjoy hospitality and it was their aim to progress within that industry, and then you've got people who are doing it because they got fuck all else to do.
Yeah,
they're the annoying ones.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Socials.
Yeah, so follow us on Brian Boy Sauna on Instagram, X, and what was the last, TikTok?
Yeah.
And Tom, plug social. In your socials.
Tom King, TOMMKIING.
Tom King.
Double M, double I.
Double M, double I.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Great Instagram profile, by the way. Great portfolio.
Yeah. We'll tag him in our post, so yeah. I'm sure people will...
We'll look into it.
Yeah, so
keep calm and carry on.
Thank you. Come again. Michelin stars.